All right, we are back with our continuing trade deadline preview series, doing the Southeast Division, this time sans Atlanta Hawks, because we already did them about a week ago. Danny, we're going to start with a very intriguing team because of their 2016 free agency designs, the Washington Wizards.
The Wizards' situation looked really clear when this season started, and then when they disappointed, specifically with Bradley Beal's injury concerns, that changes the dynamic a little bit. It makes Durant less likely, and they have about $35 million in space for the upcoming summer, and so a lot of their questions build around the idea of how they conceive of that space, whether they still think that they should keep a max slot open for Durant or whoever else wants to come, and what Bradley Beal's value is now.
Yeah, for those who don't recall, Beal and the Wizards were not able to reach an extension agreement. That made a lot of sense because his cap hold is only about $14 million. He would have commanded a max salary starting at around $21 million. So they basically get themselves an extra $7 million in room, and then once they spend up to the cap, they can max him out, or maybe because of these injury concerns, not give him a max and kind of let the market play out in restricted free agency. But nonetheless, they have that $35 million, and that means that they are not going to want to take on any salary that encumbers them, because even if they don't get KD, they could get another max player and a starter, or even potentially two starters, pay them each, you know, $17 million or something like that, and then get to where they would look pretty good. But it's a little interesting because they have disappointed so much. Now I think the KD dreams are looking like they may not be as realistic as they once were. So you think maybe they might try to reevaluate, but I think now they have to kind of play this through to the end game.
And one of the other kind of opportunities they would have if they decided to be a little bit more, I guess that would be bearish on their 2016 summer chances, is that they have three non-guaranteed contracts for next year, which are Humphreys, Gooden, and DeJuan Blair. And so you could use those now to just kind of say, hey, we can take on somebody you don't want for next year, and you can clear that money if it was the right guy. Or because those guys are non-guaranteed, they could do that around the draft as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. Although, as you've noted many times, there are so many teams that are just going to be able to take on random salary that I'm not sure that a team necessarily would want to give someone up who's any good at that point just for the expiring contracts. As far as draft assets, they have all their own first-rounders. They are a little light on second-rounders. They've got three that they have traded away. Some people have discussed potentially trading Beal. Do you see that as realistic at all?
It seems really hard to figure out who would value him highly enough to do that. If you're the Wizards, that kind of allows you to get another season. Let's say you were to trade him for a guy who's going into his fourth year, or maybe even younger than that. It gives you another window for free agency. So if you strike out on Durant, you could theoretically kind of keep everything ready for another year. But that's really hard. And if you want to go for a guy who already has a salary, then you're giving up that as well. So he's a very complicated guy to trade. But if somebody just loves Bradley Beal, then you listen to their offers. But I don't think you solicit them too heavily.
It is very difficult to imagine them getting someone back, and obviously whoever they get back is someone who would be on a longer-term contract. It is very difficult to imagine them getting someone back who would make them look better to prospective free agents than having Beal on Beal's restricted rights with the assumption that he's going to return. And then also his value isn't as high because he's going to be restricted. Granted, you get some extra cap space with him, as we explained, with his low cap hold, for that, so that's attractive for a team. But then you also have got to assume, if you're trading for him, that he's going to get a max offer in restricted free agency and that you're going to have to match it. So basically, you're trading for Bradley Beal on like a $20 million contract. And then also, if you are going to wait and let the market set his price, he could get a three-year deal basically with a fourth-year player option. So you're losing the upside there as well of getting him locked in for longer, at least if he does turn into a star player. I don't see them moving him, and also there's just so much uncertainty with his health that a team that would want to give something back for him. Not so you're giving up assets, and now you're also going to give a long-term near-max deal to a guy with these injury issues. I don't see any GM betting his future on that.
The reason that we like draft picks and rookie-scale guys so much is because they're undervalued and they're underpaid, and Bradley Beal looks like he's going to be either properly paid or overpaid very shortly, so you get none of the surplus value.
That's right, and I would say the odds of Washington making a major move are low. Do you think that there are any easily addressable weaknesses that they could put in for their playoff push? Right now, they are listed with about a 30% chance of getting in via 538 projections, and they are listed with only a 12.3% chance of getting in via ESPN's BPI. So pretty low odds. I'm sure internally they probably think they have a higher chance that they're going to play better than they have due to all the injuries, although, you know, the way that happens sometimes is that you get more injuries. But is there anything on this team that they could address that via a very small move, you know, trading a second rounder or something?
It'd be great if they could add a little bit more depth at power forward, just a guy who can rebound a little bit and stretch the floor. You know, you're not going to get a perfect guy, especially if you're giving up a second. That's one way. I think that, you know, especially if you see Dudley as a guy who can bounce between the three and the four. But, you know, I don't see it that way. They just more need health. And if a team wants to, you know, shed a guy for whatever reason, you can do that with the other kind of salaries they have.
Yeah, those non-guaranteed guys that you mentioned. But again, they're not going to want to take on someone who has a contract that goes beyond next year. Maybe they could say, all right, we could take on a $5 million guy or something. We'll still have $30 million in room. We can get a max. But I think they probably wouldn't necessarily want to do that. They also, hopefully for them, have Alan Anderson finally coming back. Maybe at the end of this month that's finally going to happen. Or maybe even, you know, looking more like after the All-Star break would probably be more likely with the earlier All-Star game this year. So that they will be getting him back. I don't see them really doing hardly anything. If they do, it's going to be for a very much a bit player. They could be more of a candidate for a guy on a buyout if they are still going to be in it.
I like them for that.
Yeah, so these guys, though, in thinking about it, are somewhat of a cautionary tale because their idea was, we're not going to take on any long-term salary. They still thought they would have a very competitive team this year. They brought back pretty much the same guys from last year other than Pierce, who they made a reasonable offer to. And although maybe they could have brought Pierce back if they'd been willing to offer him a second guaranteed year, which they did not because they had these free agency plans. And now, though, it is just really hard to be still good enough to appeal to a premium free agent and to also strip down at the same time. And the way you can do that is by having great young players on your roster. Like, that's what the Bulls did in 2010. They had Noah, Rose, and Gibson all on rookie deals. They couldn't get a superstar, although they, you know, if those three guys hadn't teamed up, they probably could have gotten at least one. You know, all those three guys going to Miami, they had to settle for Carlos Boozer. You know, Miami already had Dwayne Wade as the one superstar on their team. They didn't have cheap rookie contracts. That's probably the one exception that comes to mind for me. So it's really hard if you don't have those premium guys. And really the guys that those were supposed to be in Washington were Otto Porter, who is disappointed this year and really is disappointed at nearly all aspects of his career other than in the playoffs last year when he was just, and even that performance was overrated. He just shot 37% on threes. He's still at a really low usage rate. And then Bradley Beal was supposed to be the other guy who is going to make that happen. And he, now, because of his injury concerns and just kind of not really even taking that much of a step forward when he has played, that hasn't quite worked out for them, and now they may miss the playoffs, and a lot of kind of years and years of planning could go by the wayside, although it's too late to write off who they might get in free agency even in their current straits.
Certainly, and they're also in a little bit of a challenge area because they're a market that, you know, that is decent. You know, it's obviously not, but it's not New York, it's not L.A., and so what you have there is you're not going to be able to get anybody on a discount. And so that's another way that you can get, you know, kind of value from that. And I don't think they're in that place. So you have to conceive of their space that if they're paying full market value for guys, that it's hard. It's even harder to build a deep, good team in even with cap space this year.
I mean, do you think it's possible that they could, like, try to trade Kelly Oubre to get something to just make sure they make the playoffs and a guy making 5 or 6 million. I don't think there's a guy out there like that that's really that sexy.
I can't either.
It's hard to say. Yeah. I mean, they don't have the goods to get someone like Gallo, do they?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I mean, well, you know, they could maybe trade some first rounders. If you traded Oubre and a first rounder, especially if it were one that were like protected like 20 to 30 or something, so it only goes if it's in the top 20, then maybe you start getting to Tim Connelly to start thinking about that. But now, of course, you're eating into your space as well for next year. They might, and they don't really have any extraneous salary going forward after last year that they could include. Everyone knows that Danny and I are enormous nerds, and that is why we have Loot Crate as a sponsor. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's loot, and it's in a crate, and you get it every month. It's a monthly subscription service, and you get Epic Geek and gamer gear and pop culture items for less than $20 a month. You get 6 to 8 items, usually includes a t-shirt, other licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind items because they work directly with these merchandisers, and they guarantee that it's at least $40 worth a year for your $20 a month. And you can head to lootcrate.com and enter code CAPSPACE, our usual code on the show, all one word, capitals. We talk about CAPSPACE all the time, very easy to remember. And you can save $3 on any new subscription. It's basically a friend that knows what you love, surprises you with an awesome present every month. And the other part, too, for our international listeners is they actually ship to 27 countries. So if you wanted to support the podcast and you can't because some of our other sponsors do not ship there or provide services there, that is not a problem with Loot Crate. It is more than just a subscription service. It's an entire community of fans. They have like 500,000 Twitter followers. Really just a ton of people are using this. I can't believe how big it's gotten. And everyone shares their experiences, talks about the items that they get. Each month is built around a theme, and everyone gets really excited about that month's theme. And so definitely go to that site, lootcrate.com, enter the CAPSPACE code, and you can save $3 off of any new subscription, and you'll be glad you did. Let's move on to Miami. Still over the tax by about $5.5 million or so, and so they could save themselves basically $12 million bucks if they were to get under, both in salary and then $1.50.
Actually, they're repeaters, so I think it'd be more.
Are they repeater? That's they right.
Are.
Thank you for reminding me. Yeah, so it's $2.50 per dollar,
yeah,
for them, which is not amazing. They have some guys like Birdman, McRoberts now with all his injury history, is a guy who, if he had just played the way he had before he became a free agent, could have been an asset on that $5 million a year deal, but now basically, has been injured for 2 years essentially. And it's hard to see another $10 million over 2 years being an asset either. So those guys are kind of dumpable. And they already sold on Mario Chalmers to save some money as well. So you could see them maybe being a team that would try to trade somebody to Utah, try to trade somebody to Portland. But, of course, they don't necessarily have any sweeteners to do that with.
They owe 3 first-round picks because they still have the one to Philadelphia that they owe. Then they have that would be top 10 protected this year, so the expectation is they'll send it. Otherwise, it's unprotected next year. Then they owe 2 more picks to Phoenix to complete the Goran Dragic trade, so they cannot trade a first-round pick. They could do swap rights, of course, but swap rights aren't as valuable when you're Miami because it's not like the Sixers-Kings thing where there's really a possibility that they'll be terrible. And you're buying
terrible,
ping-pong balls. You're just buying less valuable ping-pong balls.
Right, right. I mean, it's not impossible.
Sure.
But, yeah.
And we've talked about it before. I've written about it. I think you have, too. Their cap situation for 2016, in my opinion, is the most fascinating in the entire league.
Yeah, it is. They could get up to really about $35 million in space, but that does not include Dwayne Wade's cap hold, and it does not include Hassan Whiteside. Whiteside has a very small cap hold, but the most they can pay him, if they only use that cap hold, is about $6 million with the early bird exception. And he's going to command more than that. So if you want to bring him back, you have to eat into that $35 million. Whatever they spend on Wade would also eat into that amount. And, I mean, I think a lot of what's going to happen here, they came a little bit closer, I think, to kind of making him whole for all the monetary sacrifices that he's made. But he's still playing well. He's going to start the All-Star game. I don't think he's that good, but certainly on the surface, and then given what he's given to the organization, He is someone who's quite worthy of $20 million a year again. And if you do that, now you're down to $15 million in space. You're not really getting much better. So much is going to rely on their ability to convince him to take less this summer.
And they don't get the benefit of, you know, like a low cap hold or anything like that with Wade. They're going to have to come to some sort of understanding. Yeah. It doesn't have to
be his cap hold will be the max. His cap hold is going to be like $29 million. So, yeah, you're going to have to – you got to make that agreement with him before really you're going to get into well,
you could renounce and then just say we'll fill you, we'll give you whatever's left, but you have to have that understanding.
But then you can't sign someone else and only have $10 million left and piss him off unless he's already agreed to that. So you're definitely it's going to be really interesting. But obviously Miami is not going to want to take on any more money, both due to their tax situation this year and trying to get under the cap next year. But still another team too that is really needs to make the playoffs to kind of make it look like, all right, if you come here, you're going to be the missing piece and we can really be a contender again. And their odds of making the playoffs are actually not as high. They had so many home games early. Now they've been hurt. Dragic hasn't even come back yet. And they got some critical wins on Dwayne Wade's back at Chicago. And they had one other one that escapes me. But still, their odds of making it are not great right now. They're 70%. According to BPI, and then they're 65%. So, I mean, they'll probably make it still, but it's not at all fait accompli that they do.
The other question that I've been wondering about with them is if they decided that Hassan Whiteside was not their guy long term, because the sign and trade value for him is basically minimal, just because the idea that basically every other team has space, that if they decided to trade him, figuring out what the market would be for him just kind of boggles my mind, because I just don't know what a team would do, because his contract is so cheap that you would have to include other players on the Miami end. And the other team, he would have early bird rights, so you wouldn't have, as we said, the issue that Miami has with signing him applies to every other team. So it would be somebody who just either sees him as a rental or just really wants to have him.
Yeah, and the fact that he's been injured with this oblique injury lately hasn't helped those efforts either, because just the sample size with him is so small. Even getting another 10 games of him playing well can kind of help with that a little bit. And yeah, I mean, when you trade for him, you have absolutely no reason to think that he would re-sign there over anywhere else, because basically you could offer him like another $2 million or so at most over the course of a max deal. You can only offer him 4 years because you have the early bird rights, and then you can offer him 7.5% annual raises instead of 4.5%. So other teams can offer him 4 years and 4.5%. That's not going to be a big enough difference to keep him there, and that assumes even that you want to offer him the absolute max. So is there a team out there that says, hey, we're going to give up some real assets to get this guy for this year? You would want him to help this year. And then also that we are going to give him the absolute maximum offer that we can next year. I don't know that there's anybody who wants to bet that hard on Hassan Whiteside and give up assets that are going to make Miami better this year as well.
Yeah, because you don't have match rights. So you're
yeah, he's not restricted because he's just had a couple cups of coffee before this. He acquired a year of service.
Yeah, and he was, you know, he was a pick by the Kings, so he played around there. And yeah, I don't see it as a realistic possibility, but you know, if they basically said we don't want to bring him back and so we'd rather get something than nothing, they could do that. And what's kind of amazing about it is Miami, let's say he ends up somewhere else, they've done an amazing job raising his value, and of course he helped them win games, but they would end up getting no long-term assets from it.
Yeah, and that's why it really hurts that they weren't able to get a third year on when they signed him. And it would have been difficult. But because they were over the cap the year that they signed him, they only could have offered him 2 years. What our friend Albert Nabat has said is that what they should have done was give him a team option for the second year in addition to a non-guarantee. So what they could have done there is decline the team option last summer. And I'm going from memory here, but I think this is right. Decline the team option last summer. And then he would have still been restricted. I think he would have only had 3 years of service at that point. And so they could have at least have been sure of keeping him. But now that is no longer the case. He'll be unrestricted with the 4 years of service.
And the other two guys that we don't need to talk about in depth, but if theoretically they decided to move Deng, or for kind of similar logic to Whiteside, if we're probably not going to bring him back and do that, or if they wanted to go in a bigger change route and do something with Goran Dragic, those guys are also hard to calibrate their value.
Yes, it is. All right, should we move on now to another? I mean, I think the Heat are fascinating, but I think it's unlikely that they do anything, both due to the lack of assets and kind of wanting to be frozen there, but because they don't want to take on any more space. The Hornets, though, I mean, I guess the first question that is maybe harder to answer for this team than a lot of teams is, do you see them as buyers or sellers?
It makes sense for them to want to buy this year, especially because they need to. They have so many guys that are going to be free agents, and most importantly, that are going to be unrestricted free agents, that you need to sell them on your legitimacy.
Yeah, although of those free agents, they've got Al Jefferson, who will be a free agent. I think he's going to be 31, has not been healthy this year. His cap hold is about $20 million. Batum, obviously, has played very well when he's been healthy, although this toe thing has really seems to have been nagging him lately as he's been in and out of the lineup. But still, as long as he continues to play well this year, a guy who's going to get $20 million a year, maybe even more than that, his cap hold is around $20 million as well. And then Marvin Williams, who has had a renaissance year himself, probably his best year since his Atlanta days, he, as a guy who now can play more four with the way the league is going, and is younger than you think, he's only, I think, about 28, 29, he would have a cap hold of around $10 million. So it's... maybe a little less than that. When you throw in all those cap holds, they will be over the cap. But obviously, if all those guys leave, they would have about $40 million or so in room. I think the only one of those guys that they're really going to be gung-ho to bring back is going to be Batum.
Yeah, and I assume they're willing to offer, as of right now, they would be willing to offer him his maximum.
Yeah, which would be about $25 million. To start.
Good for Nick Batum.
They will have full bird rights, and maybe if they went a full 5 years with $20 million, that might be enough to convince them to stick around. But, I mean, there's no reason for him to do that over four for 25 with another team. You get the same money in 4 years. So I don't know. We'll see what happens with him. But I do think they're trying to make the playoffs for that reason. Also, just because they have this rebrand as the Charlotte Hornets. It was disappointing they didn't make it last year. They've only made it, twice in the whole time since the franchise was rebooted in 2004. So really, teams like that try to make the playoffs, and I could see them doing it. What do you think they need, both for this year and then also kind of as you look at what their core is?
Well, yeah, so actually, in a way, that's the challenge. So you think about somebody like Jeremy Lin. Like, Jeremy Lin's a really nice guy to have right now. But
oh, yeah, he's another guy who could be a free agent.
But
he is a low cap hold. It's only,
yeah. If they want to bring him back and he wants to come back, they can make that happen. But it's going to be... I would love to see them if you see Kaminsky, basically a big man who is more defense-oriented, but Clifford's been able to make it work without those kind of guys for a while, but I still think it would help.
Yeah, something like Bismack Biyombo. Just kidding.
Not kidding.
Yeah, well, he's never going to go back.
Oh, of course. No, I'm just saying that it would have been nice if they'd kept him.
Yeah, maybe so. I think that is something that they could use. Is anyone like that really going to be available, though?
Probably not. Oh, also, it sounds like Michael K. Gilchrist is going to come back. He might even be back this week.
Yeah, so that would help. And maybe if they take off when he's back, that would make them kind of stronger on the buy side. I don't really see anyone among pending free agents that would be an amazing fit for them. Unless you want to go in sort of the Chris Kaman type of route, but that's not, he's not really good enough defensively that he would play over any of the guys that they have already. So it's hard for me to see them really picking anyone up. They could always, of course, use another wing, but with MKG coming back, that's less of a concern. Hopefully, if Lamb can get healthy, that would mean that PJ Harrison won't have to be in the rotation anymore. They've got Walker, they've got Lin. They actually have a relatively deep team, and then Al Jefferson is going to be coming back too. They're going to want to play him. So they don't have – it's always difficult, right, to make a trade when you don't have any enormous holes in the lineup. I mean, it'd be nice if they had a shot blocker, but they have plenty of bigs already. So I don't see a great way to upgrade where you say, all right, we really want to throw throw out an asset. But, you know, if they had four first-round picks instead of Mike Kaminsky, you know what I did there? I conflated Frank Kaminsky and Mike Jaminski. That is like
nice little white guy confluence there, late 80s, early 90s.
That's incredible. This is a preview of my old age.
I think that's what we just need to call him from now on.
What else do we have to say about these guys?
I think they're a team that if the opportunity presented itself, they would be well positioned to spend some of their summer space now, if that opportunity. But because they have all this kind of stuff in cap holds, if they could get, I don't exactly know who the guy is off the top of my head. You could think about that list in the Clippers one about just kind of guys. Aginsa, even somebody like that, to just say, hey, we'll take on the extra years of his contract and give you Flotsam back. I think that would be a way to do it for them, just because it adds certainty, and there are some of those guys who the teams, maybe not Aginsa, but there are some of those guys who teams would be like, who would be kind of happy to unload them in that way, and that's great for Charlotte.
Yeah, I don't know. It's especially with their guys coming back, they're going to want to see how everything kind of works together. I mean, I think a lot of these teams, both because there are so many teams in it in the East, because there are teams with injured guys coming back, because there are teams that kind of want to make themselves look good and make the playoffs for free agency, because there's so much cap space and people just don't really even know. We've never seen this before. There's uncertainty. Uncertainty usually leads to less transactions. That's kind of why I'm foreseeing a quieter deal here. Or a quieter deadline here. And those teams that have more certainty or are willing to kind of bet on it, they could either get fleeced or they could do really well. But I think that inherently general managers could be more conservative. And with this big summer coming up, nobody wants to rock the boat too badly.
Would you consider moving Brian Roberts for a small asset if they could do that?
Yeah, I'm glad you put him on the list. I'd forgotten about him. Getting a second rounder for him, yeah, that wouldn't be too bad. And there are some teams out there. He could be like, you know, go to Utah or something. I think he actually wouldn't be a bad fit in Utah, because the one thing that he can do is shoot the ball. And so he, you know, maybe he could be another option on certain nights when they're just not guarding Raul Neto or something. You know, he's not much of a defender. He's older than you think, you know, really in his late 20s.
And they have cap space. But they could just do it as a flat out trade.
Yeah, they could. And, you know, maybe, and Utah has 8 million second rounders to, then maybe they could give up one of those ones, like a Golden State one or something. That would probably be about fair value, or maybe even like two. I think they have two Golden State first-rounders, although one of those might go to Denver, but I'm not sure about that. But, yeah, that's the sort of thing, but that is obviously relatively small potatoes in the grand
scheme. Yeah, we should also mention they have their own first-rounders. They owe their 2016 second to the Thunder as part of the Jeremy Lamb trade.
Let's get to the Magic now. This is another team that is kind of on the cusp, although if they continue their losing ways for the next week or two, I think it'll start to become apparent that they will not be making the playoffs, and maybe they could move more into seller mode. Let's see what their odds are here.
They're not going to make the playoffs. I'm just telling you. My DPI is telling me.
DPI, Danny Power Index?
Yes.
Their odds on BPI are 3.0%, and then on 538, their odds are 7%.
I'd say seven's closer to right than three. You know,
they're only 20-24, and so I think it would be possible for them internally to think that they are closer than they actually are. We've seen many teams think that. I mean, part of the problem for them isn't only their record, but they have to jump a bunch of teams too.
Right.
So that would be difficult. However, let's talk about kind of what they have. Channing Frye, really from the moment that he has signed there, he's making about $8 million a year, but his contract declines in value, and he's played, this has been a good year for him, a bounce-back year, until he recently was taken out of the starting lineup. I still think playing center, he could be a great bench center, especially if you're one of these teams that has like a power wing. I would really like him a lot on a team like the Wolves if they were going to be a little bit more sane in their offensive system, have a guy who kind of just hangs out and shoots three-pointers while Shabazz Muhammad tries to post up on their second unit. But, again, they're probably not really in the area of the success cycle for a guy like Frye, who's in his early 30s now. But let me ask you this. I mean, just in general, what is Fry worth? What would you give up for him?
I don't think I'd give up a first unless he was exactly what I needed. But I'd give up, you know, let's say not one of the top five second round picks, but something below that. I'd happily do that as long as, because his salary, it's high, but it's not ridiculous relative to where the cap is going.
Yeah, is he an asset? Is kind of the question. Are you?
Yes.
I think you're. That's
maybe not
right.
For everybody, but for for most teams, I would say so. I mean, think about, we just talked about Charlotte. He'd be a nice fit as a second unit center for them. They have bunch of dudes already, but you know.
I mean, he basically is Kaminsky at this point. Probably
that's
a little
kind of high praise for Kaminsky from you.
They're close enough that, especially like, because the part of the value there is you're getting him for another couple of years, too.
Yeah,
and I think a team that knows how to use him, I think he would actually be a really good guy on the Mavs. With what they're trying to do offensively, you could just sort of play him the same way that you play Dirk, as sort of like a Dirk light, run pick and pops with him at the top of the key on your second unit. Get a little, you know, he would be much better than Dwight Powell as their backup center, to be sure. Or Salah Mejri, who we saw in person last night, didn't look great, but that's, you know, that's against the Warriors, so it's tough to knock him too badly there. I think he would be awesome on the Clippers, and they could trade Lance Stephenson for him, who would just expire this summer, and that would give the Magic some more cap room. They're really only going to have, you know, between 15 and 20 million in cap room with the holds for Fournier and Nicholson.
If they were willing to give him up with that for not much of an asset, the Clippers would be a logical place.
How about Fournier? You think they could move on from him? Could they say, hey, we have Mario Hezonja. He was the number 5 pick. He's the future. Fournier is a guy we're going to have to pay $10 million a year to, maybe in free agency as a restricted free agent. Let's just dump him now and see if we can get something back for him. What do you think? How good is that going
to
be?
They could. They also have a lot of salary if they need to buffer that. I think he's a guy who teams would like. If he were traded, it would be one of those circumstances. I'm trying to remember who the analog was this past year. There was somebody, I remember this happened, where everybody saw the price they went for, and they're like, wait, did they actually like shop that guy to teams because it was really undervalued? Like, he's a guy, as a guy who can create a little bit. I mean, you know, he's not a primary ball handler, but as a secondary, that's a really nice thing to have. And now his value has kind of dropped a little bit. It's not the highs that it was in, let's say, around Thanksgiving.
Yeah, because he's not starting anymore.
Right, and I think he's probably best as your, I would say, your third swingman. I think that on a good team, that would be a really nice spot for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's worth 10 or so million. And so 10 to 12, maybe starting.
I mean, I think you look at like what Terrence Ross got in an extension last year, you know, I think he's going to get at least that.
I would think so. So, yeah, I think if you could, and especially the fact that you have.
Yeah. And what did Ross got? What, like 3 for 33, right?
Yeah.
So
you have team control at a low cap hold. That combination of things, yeah. If I were the right team, I would be thrilled. Incidentally, the Nuggets would be a nice fit for him.
Yeah, maybe. I think really the type of team that's really going to want him is one where that is a team that thinks it's going to be in the mix for some really good players this off season, and then can use his low cap hold and then pay his contract afterwards. I think actually for a younger team, maybe he doesn't make as much sense because he's going to get expensive immediately, and maybe that doesn't quite fit with what you're going to want to do. I mean, you're at the point now, if you were just had one more year left, and then you could say, all right, maybe we can extend him for a cheaper price or something, but now you're absolutely probably going to have to pay a premium for him this offseason, so maybe he doesn't have as much value. If you were the Magic, would you trade him for a pick that would be like the 20th pick?
I don't think I would. I think for that I'd probably keep him, but that's with my estimation of him. Something else that we've talked about before, but I think is important to mention with the Magic, is they have shockingly little cap space over the summer. Like, you think about this, this is a young team. Usually young teams are relatively cheap. They, if you include the holds for Fournier and Nicholson, both of whom are playing pretty well this year, but you don't include Jason Smith, Dedmon, and Marble, who have Dedmon particularly has a cheap cap hold, they only have $17 million in space. That isn't to say that they have this, like, dead money or wasted money, but they just have a lot of it on their books. C.J. Watson, Tobias Harris, Vucevic, Channing Frye. And so they're not a team that's sitting there going like, oh, we have this war chest of money that we can use to throw at somebody, even if maybe we have to overpay just to get better.
Yeah, that's a good point, too, and maybe that could be a motivation to move on from Fry as well. I think, though, you get a little bit of a window into what their plans are, because you look at Tobias Harris's contract, it's 4 years, $64 million. It started at $16 million this year. Normally, you would start it as low as you possibly can. They did not do that. And then this next year, it goes up to 17. And then they decline it again the next 2 years. So that is like a little bit of a window into their thinking that we're not going to try and use as much as we can in free agency this year. We're going to try to strike in 2017, 2018 instead.
And Tobias Harris's contract will look great then, if they want to keep him or if they want to move him.
We'll see. I mean, he feels like he's kind of stagnating a little bit. Maybe that's true. Maybe
yeah.
It's
but
not.
Just like if you want to move him, the risk, if it's like, let's say at that point it's two years, $32 million or something, that'll look nice.
Would you do this trade if you were the Magic? Channing Frye for the Nets second rounder. Remember, we talked about that with the Clippers. It's protected 56 to 60. Now that Blake Griffin is going to be out, the Clippers probably won't finish with one of the five best records. And so then that means that pick goes from the Nets. It's a swap. So the Clippers pick will swap with the Nets. And so they're going to get the Nets pick this year. So that'll be, 34th pick or something like that. And C.J. Wilcox. Would you do that trade? And then Lance Stephenson, aspiring contract to match the salaries. Would you do that trade if you were Orlando?
Yeah, I think I would. I don't think you're going to get much better than that if you wanted to move Fry in the summer. I just don't. You're not, if you want to trade him at the draft, you're not going to get, I don't think you're going to get the number 30 pick. So you're mitigating the risk of him getting hurt or something like that. Wilcox is a decent flyer to have. I think he still has at least one more year that's cheap. And then, Lance is, of course, Lance. But, yeah, I would do that. But it's a close. Like, I don't think you could really weaken that offer and still have me accept it.
Yeah, that might be true. And also, if you think about it, what do they need? Like, C.J. Wilcox in his second year, he's not going to play at all when he gets there. They have a million wings already. That second rounder, maybe you can get somebody decent. This isn't reputed to be a great draft. And when you need another young guy who's not going to play at all probably already, they have a very full roster. And Fry, actually, with the lack of shooting that they have at the guard positions with these guys, Payton and Oladipo, who are supposed to be a big part of the future, he actually fits in really well with what they're trying to do as a backup center. So maybe you don't move him. Maybe it doesn't really make that much sense unless you get someone else that you think can help. But
yeah, because you're not getting value out of the space.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would be a reason to dump him if you just think that he's going to fall off a cliff or something. But if you're trading him, you're trading him to a good team. And so if you want to get someone back who's going to help, a good team isn't going to want to give you that because they're trying to be good. So why would they give up someone who's going to help?
Good point.
And that's what really makes a lot of these deals kind of difficult, is that there are not that many teams who are just willing to give up guys. And some of these young teams, I mean, the Bucks are kind of another one that are a little bit out of it. The Jazz are one who are kind of right on the cusp. Orlando is one. These teams that actually have a bunch of good young players already, yet still have a few veterans and may not make the playoffs, it doesn't make sense for them to just get more young guys. And then what else are you really going to get? I mean, maybe you could get, you might trade it for a first-round pick that's like a couple years in the future or something like that, but that's where you're going to finally have to replenish the stores. But it does make things kind of difficult at some point to have so many of these good young guys that you all need to play for. It's like, now if we do have veterans, there's no point in trading them any longer.
And the Magic have this complicated circumstance, which the Bucks do as well. I was thinking about it when you mentioned them, where we still need to see how their pieces fit together. And I think that they will have to make a bigger move at some point, in my opinion. They'll have to do something to reshuffle the deck. But this is almost definitely not the right time for it.
Yeah, and I have always thought that the way they need to play is to play Aaron Gordon at the four as a pure four and kind of have shooting around him, get him involved in some pick and rolls, get guys who could switch more on the perimeter. I mean, but they just have too many guys on this team who can't shoot. And it goes back to just, I never really cared that much for their drafting strategy because to me, they've never picked that guy who has the upside to just be an unbelievable scorer and offensive centerpiece. And now they're sort of have all these guys who are pretty good. And like, you know, Tobias Harris could score a little bit, but doesn't really do much else. And he's not really a dominant scorer who's going to create for others. And then Aaron Gordon has the athleticism, but doesn't really have the skill level. And I don't know that he necessarily projects to have it, even though he's really young. You know, Payton can't shoot at all. Oladipo, really athletic, but he can't shoot at all either. You have all these guys who are kind of, all right, they could be kind of good, but they're too similar to one another, and nobody really has superstar potential, and they also don't have anybody who can protect the rim. I mean, there are just too many flaws in ultimately what you would need to be a 50-win level team with the guys that they have on the roster. So I do think a trade ultimately needs to be made, but it's going to have to be the type of thing where it's like a challenge type of trade. And those trades don't really happen in the NBA anymore. It's just, you know, all right, we've got our veteran who's good, and we're going to trade him for either just straight-up prospects, or we're going to trade him for draft picks, and that's it. You know, and if they're going to be wedded to all these guys, it's hard to see what their path is to get to being really, you know, a contender top four seed in the conference type of team.
And by getting a ton of guys who try hard and are, you know, reasonably athletic, and especially now having a hard driving coach, they've also ensured that they're going to be too good to bottom out. And so that they're, you know, if what you need, if you have a lot of good supporting pieces, but you need the top guys, their path to getting a top guy basically doesn't exist unless they get really lucky in the lottery.
Yeah, to me, it's all about their point guard. I don't think that Payton or Oladipo are the answer long-term for them. I think you need to get a dominant point guard, and if you get that, now some of these other guys like Harris could sort of be your secondary scorer. You got Hazonia, you got Fournier on the wing who can be shooters. Next to that guy, maybe run a secondary pick and roll if needed. You got Aaron Gordon playing the four, running the floor as kind of a defensive monster. And maybe Vucevic is the other guy who doesn't necessarily fit in. I mean, I just think, yeah, at point guard and center, they, especially with both of those kind of being weaknesses, like guys having, you know, Vucevic with his defense, the point guard's not being able to shoot, I think that you got to solve one of those two issues long term. Even though, you know, if you look at Payton, you look at Oladipo, you look at Vucevic, none of those guys on their own are like bad players necessarily, but they all don't really fit together, in my opinion.
There is a danger to having your center be a little bit shaky, defense have a strength as an offensive player, not a defensive player, and having your point guard have the strength as a defensive player, not running an offense.
I think that's right. And then also just the fact that those guys, well, Payton and Oladipo, well, they have a lot of natural talent, you know, maybe haven't necessarily translated that, especially Oladipo, into any sort of metric indicating that they really are very good players on defense.
Are they the only team that has a starting center that's a better shooter than their point guard? Maybe the Wolves?
Oh, yeah, well, that's definitely true. No, I bet you there are a bunch of teams like that. Although, you know, to be fair, it is much harder to shoot the ball as a guard than it is as a big guy. You know, you just, every jumper you take as a big guy generally is going to be catch and shoot. You're not required to shoot off the dribble, which is much harder to do. You know, you're not required to kind of create your own shot nearly as much as guards. So it's not necessarily fair to compare the two. But I see what you're saying. Certainly relative for position, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking more just absolutely. Like if you gave them, if you had them both shoot from 18 feet, you had them each shoot like five, like you did kind of like the equivalent of a three-point contest from 18 feet, I think Vucevic wins that going away.
We'll see. But yeah, all right. Anything else that we need to talk about with these guys before we go?
I don't think so.
All right. I think that will do it for today. Thanks so much for listening. Anything to plug as we get going here?
Yeah, I just released a piece on Real GM shortly before we recorded this about one of the issues we actually talked about in the Clippers one, about the idea of trading Lance Stephenson for a guy with a longer-term contract just because the Clippers have so few ways to improve, and I threw out a bunch of guys just like I did when we did the podcast.
Yeah, and it's just so damaging for them that they traded that 2017 pick to get rid of Dudley, who, A, would have really helped them last year. You know, they probably at least beat the Rockets if they got him on the roster. And B, now you're encumbered from trading future picks. Lance Stephenson's expiring contract plus a first-rounder right now, if they could trade that, that would actually get him something that would really help this year. You know, and they now don't have that ability, and people aren't going to want to trade for, you know, your 2019 first rounder, that's too far away to really entice teams to, they're going to give someone up who's really going to help you. You know, other teams are going to beat that offer.
Yeah, the only other thing I'll add is I talked about one of the hypotheticals. I think you and I have talked about it a little bit. I've talked about it with a few other CBA nerds about the idea that because they'll have full bird rights, if Austin Rivers declines his option, they will have the ability to sign him to any contract up to his maximum, with his dad being the president of basketball operations, will be insane.
That'll be interesting. Well, he is their best defensive player. All right, that'll do it. Again, I tried to get us out of here the first time and failed. Follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. Danny is Danny LaRue. If you would like to support our little endeavor here, that cap space code, all one word, on our sponsors like Loot Crate and SeatGeek and Helix Sleep is a great way to do so. Or an iTunes review or rating, also a great way to support the pod. So thanks to Danny for coming on. We'll talk to you all next time.